Hey guys, this is Zenu, and you're listening to Anti-Moon Boy News. Well, we got a good one today for you guys. We will be talking about Bitcoin knots and the latest cringe going on with that. We also are going to be covering the latest in Cubic, which seems to be dying down. And also, I got a story about my dad dealing with chain analysis, which is kind of funny because he's a boomer who has absolutely no idea how cryptocurrency works. So yeah, we got a lot to talk about, but first we got super chats. You can go to xmrchat.com/Zenu if you'd like to participate. And I got four this week. The first one is from Anon, who donates 0.01369 XMR. Thank you. And he says, please consider less aggressive intro and outro music. Very informative videos, but the sound mix consumes conciseness in a not smooth way. He then goes on to say, any takes on music and living the analog life? Smart city / homes, technocracy, and media consumption in general. Well, thanks again, Anon. That's a lot of topics there. I'll do my best. Now, regarding the music, I find it funny you find it to be aggressive, because I personally find it to be very chill and relaxed, at least the intro music. The aesthetic I was going for was the Adult Swim bumper music, which Flying Lotus, who's the featured artist this month, Flying Lotus produced a lot of that music and the direction for that music, or the music bumpers. And so this is kind of just, I don't know. You're going to have a different featured artist next month. I'm going to continue with that idea. So I guess starting in October, I'm going to switch to someone else. But for now, I'm going to keep the music the way it is. Unless enough people complain, but I've actually had pretty much everyone else has said they liked it. So I'm going to keep the music for now. but I also don't really understand your comment here about the sound mix consuming conciseness. I don't understand what that means. Unless you think it's too loud, the mix is too loud, which it might be. I'll try to make the mix a little more leveled when I do the post-mix after I record. So I'll look into that. Now, moving on, though, you ask, any takes on music and living the analog life and about technocracy and media consumption in general? That's a massive topic. I guess to kind of just briefly summarize regarding music. Yeah, I'm a huge music nerd. I was a college DJ, played in multiple bands. I've seen literally thousands of shows. in fact, I'm actually in November, probably, I'm going to this electronic festival thing. Not some cringy EDM bullshit, like real shit. But I might not be doing that. I'll talk about it on the show. It's part of my vacation trip I'm planning for November, which I should be booking soon. So I'll probably bring that up later. But I love going to see shows. And if I get talking about different bands and stuff, we'll be here all day. So I'm not going to do that. living the analog life. And I guess stepping back and pulling a Luke Smith power to you. I can definitely see that vibe. I like living in the woods myself. I've done that before. I've also lived in cities, and I like them both. They both have their pros and cons. That's just my personal take on it. And yeah, I guess regarding your comments about media consumption and living the analog life, I'm actually a little contrarian in this aspect. There's been this recent push for the Luke Smith kind of side of things, where you kind of remove yourself and you dislike anything related to consuming, and kind of mock people for it. I don't know. I mean, I just, kind of expanded on me liking music a lot. I also watch, anime sometimes. I like different nerdy things like that. It's just, don't take it too seriously is what I would say. I'm not in favor of the kind of pretentious anybody who's consuming is below me kind of viewpoint. I'm not saying that's what someone like Luke Smith is saying, but that's kind of the general vibe. There's pros and cons to kind of any way of living, I think. So yeah, I guess when it comes to media consumption, just don't take it too far and don't think too much about it is what I would say. It's in fact even more cringe to care about someone else caring about something, if that makes sense. I like that kind of annoys me. It's kind of this like being pretentious about what you should be pretentious about, I guess. Anyway, that's enough talking about that. But thanks, Anon. Appreciate the donation. Next up, we got a super chat from our good friend Leo, who gives 0.15 XMR. Nice to see you, Leo. All right, he gave me basically an email here, so we're going to work through this step by step. First off, he asks, what do you think about the proof-of-work solution proposed by Dr. K? He's related to the Chi network. Looking forward to your thoughts. Yeah, this guy, Dr. K, he was on Monero Talk. I have not seen it yet. Basically, he's proposing a proof-of-work system that's based on shares. So it actually would be really similar to P2 Pool, as I understand it. So you're not mining blocks directly, but you're mining shares of a block. I think it's interesting. The only issue with this is it would be a radical change to the network, so it would require a hard fork. And there would be a lot of different stuff under the hood that would have to happen and change. And yeah, I'm not sure how feasible that would be. But it does seem like it does solve some of the issues that we're seeing now. I'm just more in favor of something that preserves what we have now, yet it, you know, hardens it, which is why I'm leaning towards Tevador's publish or perish, you know, solution, because it's basically just taking what we have now and improving it, you know. But the thing is, I haven't seen that episode yet, so I might be completely misunderstanding what he's proposing. So I will put a disclaimer out there. But yeah, thanks for reminding me. I'm going to have to listen to that this week during work. So then he goes on to ask, what if the folks now talking about proof of stake for XMR are compromised? This whole cubic thing stinks. Have you thought about creating a docu on XMR using AI, perhaps? I think he meant to say documentary. And then he goes on to ask, oh man, Leo puts me, this is like homework, man. He's giving me like 8 questions here, but he donated a lot, so I'll answer them all. Then he asks, thoughts on Airweave, the Odyssey payment coin, and have you seen Tangem start using Blockade? Okay, yeah, let's take that one at a time. The proof of stake crowd in XMR, are they compromised? I think no. I think they're just people who use XMR that are interested in proof of stake for the most part. Compromise is a heavy word, you know. We kind of throw it around, but we should be careful and we should be a little mature about this, I guess. And there's obviously different opinions here. And to their point, you know, proof of work isn't working as good as we thought. You know, when these reorgs first hit, I put out this tweet where I said that trust in RandomX has been irrevocably damaged. You know, when I tweeted that out, I was thinking, maybe I was being a little too harsh there. But, you know, I think it definitely ended up being that way. You know, trust has been really damaged. And so this is a big test for, you know, Monero developers and researchers. And so because of that, I think all options should be on the table. You know, I think we should do everything we can to get the best possible solution. So I really don't think that the, you know, the proof of stake guys are necessarily, you know, doing this for nefarious reasons. I think they actually think it's the best reason. I like, for example, Luke Parker has done so much for Monero. Is a finality layer, is that going to like, you know, break things or anything. No, it's just what he thinks will you know, solve, you know, the current issues that we have. Yeah, like, I personally don't agree with that, but, you know, this is what he's saying. So anyways, you then ask if I'm making, or if I thought about making a documentary on Monero. No, I have not. But I might, so, like, again, with user-friendly videos, there is perhaps demand to make, like, a history of Monero kind of mini-series. I would be fine making that. I did have a project I was starting to work on that hasn't, that's probably not going to see the light of day, but I was going to, like, do, like, a more of, like, a documentary. But, I'm sorry, I'm being cryptic. I just don't want to, like, promise something that isn't going to happen. I have, so, yeah, I have, like, considered making longer form kind of projects. I will say likely I will make, at some point I will make, like, a more of, like, a full-length kind of, you know, opinion piece kind of thing. Similar to, like, you know, Darknet Market Maximalism. I have other ideas as well that I want to do. But, yeah, so maybe I'll have, like, something like that in the future. So yeah, maybe I'll just, like, ask an AI to make a documentary based on the text of Darknet Market Maximalism. I suppose I could do that once that becomes feasible. So yeah, thoughts on Airweave. I have never used it. I don't really know much about Odyssey's payment thing, to be honest. The fact that Odyssey doesn't use Monero, for what it's worth, is kind of ridiculous. It's like a red flag for, like, any of these, like, you know, companies that preach, like, free open source software or privacy, and they're not using Monero. It's a little suspect. And lastly, Tangem using Blockade. Yeah, I don't know what Tangem is. I had to look this up. I guess it's some sort of wallet. And they're using this, I guess, chain analytics censorship thing called Blockade. Yeah, I think these are going to be really common going forward. So that's interesting. I didn't even know about that. But I'm not surprised. You know, you're going to have more and more censorship that's approved by the state going forward. And this is going to absolutely impact cryptocurrency. So yeah, I'm not really surprised by that. But anyways, Leo, thank you for all those questions. Really appreciate it. Lastly, we have a donation from Schrodinger, who gives 0.02 XMR. Thank you. And they say, great podcast. Glad I found it recently. Looking forward to the video about EigenWallet. And then in parentheses, what a horrible rebranding. Well, thank you, Schrodinger. Glad you are now following the pod. Yeah, I don't know about the rebranding myself, EigenWallet. I think, here's my thoughts on that, though. I think the reason they're rebranding is because of Unstoppable Wallet. So I think they didn't want to get confused with that wallet because they were Unstoppable Swap. That's my guess. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the logo now, and I think for me, that's my biggest thing I don't like about it, where it's got the Lambda. But I just think of Half-Life when I see that. So that's the first kind of mistake here. I'm just thinking of Half-Life. And then the font itself for EigenWallet, it doesn't seem like it's... I don't like how it's positioned. I don't like the fact that it's all lowercase. I know I'm saying that with Xenu being my name, it's all lowercase. But, like, I don't like it here. And I don't like the kind of... Yeah, I don't like the italics. So, I think they could have done better with the logo and the font. I think that would make it cooler. I also don't like how the website is a white background. And yeah, I'm being a little picky here, but like that, I kind of agree with you where like there's things I don't really like about it. But I will be making a video eventually about EigenWallet. So stay tuned for that. So anyways, that is the super chats for this week. xmrchat.com/Xenu. If you'd like to participate next week. So some channel updates. I didn't really get anything done this week. because I was just busy. And next week is also looking pretty busy, I'll be honest with you guys. Hopefully going to get some videos out, though. I will be making a video on RetoSwap that is coming. So maybe this week, maybe next week. So I do have a correction to make from last week where I about invalid transactions. Basically, if there are large reorgs and a transaction is made using a ring that was orphaned, that transaction would then become invalidated. And if that does happen, their transaction would sit in the mempool for 7 days. So I actually didn't know about this. So that's actually a really good catch from someone on YouTube, Frieza something. So thank you, Frieza. I appreciate that. And yeah. So, you know, these reorgs, they do cause transactions to get stuck. We already knew that with, you know, some certain transactions that do fail. So, you know, if there is a double spend failure, that would be 72-hour delay. These invalid transactions, though, would be a 7-day delay where it would just be sitting before it gets purged. So I appreciate you for bringing that up. And yeah, if anyone ever picks up some sort of mistake, definitely let me know. I don't want to be spreading disinformation if at all possible. Speaking of disinformation, it's now time to talk about the Bitcoin Knots controversy. So basically, over the past week or so, the pro-Bitcoin Knots side has taken things to an extreme that even I am raising my eyebrows at, in which they are accusing the core side of being okay with child pornography being uploaded on the blockchain. Yeah. The whole thing is absurd. It's ridiculous. And I'm going to be breaking it down in this little segment here of my thoughts on the two sides here, why this whole, you know, attack, this social media attack that's happening is pathetic, and kind of the broader things that are happening that are going unnoticed, in my opinion. So first things first, I don't like Bitcoin Knots primarily because of how they treated Samurai Wallet. So I'm in like a niche here. You know, I don't like Bitcoin Core. They've made some really bad decisions over the past decade. Yeah, I don't like Bitcoin Core. But like, I understand that, you know, they got some smart people. I just disagree with their mindset towards cryptocurrency, essentially. But over time, I've accepted the fact that Bitcoin has trade-offs that, you know, digital cash can't have. And that's kind of what Bitcoin is doing. It's more liquid, whatever. Bitcoin is its own thing. So yeah, I'm like more at peace with Bitcoin than I have been actually probably for a while. You know, it's kind of like it's own thing. They're doing their own thing. And they're kind of making do with what they have. And so with Samurai Wallet, you know, they have Zero Link CoinJoin and BIP47. And the thing is, those protocols, they exceed the 80 byte limit that is capped off by Bitcoin Knots. Now, Bitcoin Knots, what they do is they filter transactions that are over that size. The whole point of Bitcoin Knots essentially is to make sure transactions aren't above a certain threshold. And their argument for that is they don't want spam on the blockchain. If you know about Bitcoin and what they've been dealing with inscriptions, you're probably aware of like why they wouldn't want spam on the blockchain. And I'm not necessarily even against this, you know, argument necessarily. Because like, yeah, I don't really think Bitcoin should be, you know, file sharing platform, which it's not, but this is kind of the exaggeration that's being put forth. However, from my perspective, what I want for Bitcoin is fungibility. I want privacy with Bitcoin. And this was achievable with Samurai Wallet. That's why I've co-signed with them. Now, I think Ashigaru has kind of taken over at this point. I need to do a little more research on that before I can, you know, really back them. If you've been following my program, I've been covering Ashigaru. There's been some, you know, kind of up in the air discussion as to whether or not they should be trusted, but nonetheless, they are continuing what Samurai Wallet had. And the thing is, like, in the past, Luke Dash Jr., who is the guy running Bitcoin Knots, actually, he's the only guy running it, which is one of the main criticisms of Bitcoin Knots, but whatever. The problem here is, in the past, Luke has actually gotten into arguments with the Samurai Wallet side, and he has actually called Samurai Wallet transactions spam. And that's outrageous. I mean, these were transactions that gave privacy to people who wanted privacy. Calling that spam is ludicrous. It's insane. And this is the guy that's maintaining this project. So, like, the people who are running Bitcoin Knots are essentially worshiping this guy who, he's also a piece of garbage, and we're not going to even bother going down that path. But when it comes to privacy, he is totally dishonest. And that's very, very troubling to me. And, you know, the podcast Bitcoin Cult, they don't fucking care about privacy. So, like, they're not really even covering this. But this is, for me, in my point of view, this is the main reason why I don't like Bitcoin Knots. It's the way they treat privacy. And this is really the path that Bitcoin has chosen, where they, instead of having base layer privacy, they have these kind of soft fork add-ons. And I disagree with this, personally. I do disagree with this, but this is what they've chosen. And okay, we can make do with it, right? Well, in this case, if you're running a Bitcoin Knots node, you are saying you don't want that. So I think that's ridiculous. Now, here's the thing. The Bitcoin Knots nodes, they don't actually do anything. Okay. This entire thing is theater. It's literally wear the mask, but with Bitcoin. Okay. If you run a Bitcoin Knots node, you're not preventing people from sending, you know, bad things on the Bitcoin blockchain. Okay. Basically, what you're doing is, yes, you are saying that you're not going to relay certain types of transactions. So, for example, let's say you're running a Bitcoin Knots node and somebody sends you, or somebody broadcasts a transaction that exceeds the threshold that Bitcoin Knots allows. So this would be a spam transaction from the perspective of Bitcoin Knots. Your node will say, nope, we're not going to relay that. However, other nodes will relay that. Okay. Right now, Bitcoin Knots is apparently like 18% of nodes. So the other 82%, they will relay it. And then miners will take that transaction and they will include it in blocks. And then those Bitcoin Knots nodes that didn't relay it, they then download the block and then they have it on their hard drive. So they're essentially not relaying it and then just syncing to the blockchain and downloading it anyway. Yeah. It's really stupid. And there was a meme I saw online that summarized it perfectly. It's the Simpsons meme with Mo throwing out Barney. And then he kind of, like, you know, claps his hands together. And then you see Barney in the background back in the bar. That's, like, literally what's happening here. You know, this is pretty much doing nothing to actually stop these transactions from even happening. So, I mean, The Bitcoin Knots crowd, they argue, well, we're getting more people on our side, whatever. The bottom line here is, if they actually weren't total pussies, they would just hard fork. But they don't want to do that. And this is really this is the thing here. They don't want to hard fork. So all of this is just like theater. It's them playing pretend. Like, why can't they just hard fork? And really, it's because they don't want to lose the value of their Bitcoin. And they understand that they're going against the grain and, you know, they don't want to lose out on their investment, essentially. Because you have the majority of people with Bitcoin who support Bitcoin don't give a shit about this. But the podcast cult, they do. And like, I'm not going to really get too into this because frankly, I don't listen to the Bitcoin podcast. When I have in the past, it's just been number go up, maximalism, BS. I can't fucking stand that. But they've really taken to this issue. I mean, they are making this issue way bigger than it is. And they are, I think because they have nothing else better to do, to be honest. And also maybe to distract themselves from the fact that they were sold on this Bitcoin strategic reserve thing, which didn't happen. So they're like, oh shit, what do we talk about? We were just talking about a Bitcoin strategic reserve for the past like year. That didn't happen. Ooh, okay. Yeah. Spam. And then they've lasered in on this. I mean, you have Moonboy of 2024, Dennis Porter. He's now talking all about this. So you know it's just complete bullshit if that snake is talking about this. But yeah, this is what's happening. So this whole argument being made is all virtue signaling, right? You know, the Bitcoin not side, they're saying, well, you guys are allowing CSAM on the blockchain. And then they're running a node that later syncs to a blockchain and downloads that content anyway. I mean, maybe they can prune their nodes or whatever, but this is what's happening. They're actually approving it with their node software anyways. So like it's a virtue signaling argument that is kind of just a foreshadowing of what's to come with Bitcoin. Because you have a transparent, decentralized, open source project, these things are going to happen. The bigger issue is that the definition of what is illegal content, that can be changed at any time. And what's happening here is there's a debate that's happening about what can or can't be allowed on the blockchain. And this is a very dangerous path to take. You know, you can really look no further at how the government attacks privacy by framing these bills as being anti-terrorism or anti-CSAM. You know, they say that, but really what they're doing is they're infringing on our rights. And it's like a foot in the door. Right, where they're saying, oh, we're only against terrorists, but then they're just spying on everybody and data collecting and all this bad stuff. And so what I see is the opening fanfare of Bitcoin going down this path where there will be KYC on everything. And it's very obvious if you're kind of just looking at the trends, because obviously centralized exchanges have gone down that path. And eventually you're going to have all wallets having to follow along, and all nodes, and all miners. Because if you're allowing certain things to be broadcast, then you're committing a crime. And the definition of what that crime is, it can change over time. And I view that as very dangerous. Because, you know, we can see very quickly how things can change. And, you know, somebody who, you know, maybe donating to a fringe, you know, political group, maybe they'll be targeted now. And, well, we have a blockchain showing all their transactions. We know who they are. We're now going to censor their transactions going forward. And you have to fall in line. And if you go against that, well, you're committing a crime. Now, you might say, well, hold on. Bitcoin obviously won't go along with that. You know, we're cypherpunks. Right? There's a lot of these Bitcoiners who are like under the impression that they'll fight back against this. And it's like, dude, are you paying attention? Bitcoin is overrun with moon boys, and those moon boys will comply. 100%. Believe me, there will be people who will fight back. You know, I'll be one of them, right? But you know, what's going to happen is the price is going to dump for whatever hard fork happens that does fight back. And you got to be prepared for that. And most people are not prepared for that. And this is just kind of what I see with Bitcoin. It's slowly crawling towards this pro-state, kind of centralized, KYC-friendly, regulatory-friendly kind of situation. And the foot in the door, probably long-term, will be things like this, anti-terrorism or CSAM, things of that nature. we can't allow these things, right? So therefore, we have to have it be centralized. And this is what, this is the playbook that governments have. So, you know, I think Bitcoin should absolutely be more like money. And I'm not necessarily against limiting spam on the blockchain, but we need to have privacy on the blockchain. And we need to have really a complete, you know, overhaul of how number go up is looked at in Bitcoin. And I think the ship has sailed on that. But so, yeah, I talked about this enough. Let's move on. And yeah, next up. Yeah, I got a story to tell about my dad, and he had a run-in with, blockchain surveillance. Well, at least that's what I think happened. So basically, I was at work. I get a text from my dad, and it just says, "Hey, Xenu, I need help with that Bitcoin stuff." Now, the thing is that that text, receiving that text from my dad in particular, highly concerning. Okay. I was like, oh God, what did he get himself into? Because my dad, he, when it comes to like technology, he has absolutely no idea what's going on. Zero idea. He just defers technology stuff to my mom or me, you know? And, yeah, he's used the same password for the past 25 years. Okay. It's his favorite baseball team and the year he was born. I swear to God, he's literally, that's how my dad handles technology. I didn't get any, inherit any of that genetic trait from him, I guess. So anyway, he sends me that text and I'm like, oh boy. So, yeah, I go over my parents. And my dad then explains to me that he was trying to, he bought Bitcoin through Cash App and he was trying to send it and he is unable to send that Bitcoin. So I'm like, okay, so what are you buying? And my dad's like, well, I have a subscription to this IPTV. And again, I'm actually kind of impressed at this point because I'm like, how the hell did he figure this out? And I actually don't even know. I think my sister put him onto it, to be honest, but or maybe someone from his job or something. He somehow found out about IPTV and then he found out about Cash App. So I'm sure someone was giving him direction. And anyway, I guess he did buy a subscription, like a 3-month subscription, like a couple months ago. And now the subscription was due again. But the thing is, when he would go to send the Bitcoin from Cash App, it wouldn't send. And it would instead say something like, you're sending Bitcoin to an address that isn't trusted. You know, please reach out to customer service. Something like that. So I was like, okay, how about this? We're going to make you a Bitcoin wallet. And we're going to send the Cash App to that wallet because we can trust that wallet. And then we can send that Bitcoin there to the IPTV thing, which, by the way, it's illegal. So it's like a gray area. You know, oh, the other thing too was like, my dad was explaining to me how, yeah, he's like, yeah, in the past I was using my credit card. I'm like, what the fuck, Dad? Why are you using a credit card? He's like, oh, I don't give a shit. What are they going to do to me? He's like, I just want to watch my baseball, okay? I don't give a fuck, okay? Holy shit. So anyway, he's like using his credit card. But then the IPTV service, they were like, we no longer take credit cards. We only take Bitcoin. So then my dad started using Bitcoin. So anyways, we make the Bitcoin wallet and we go to send again. And the same error came where it was like, you're sending your Bitcoin to an untrustworthy wallet or something like that. So essentially they froze his Bitcoin. So then I explained to him, well, what probably happened was they flagged the Bitcoin address you were sending Bitcoin to, which, you know, was that, you know, IPTV illegal address. And, because of that, they basically lock your Bitcoin until you call them. And so my dad's like, all right, fine. And he like, I think he tried talking to them and he had to like talk to someone through a chat. And again, my dad technology, he just said, fuck it. So there's like $20 worth of Bitcoin in Cash App that's stuck. And I don't think he's going to, I don't know if he's even going to bother trying to get it. He gets very frustrated with dealing with customer service, which I mean, I do too. So anyways, I was like, all right, Dad, I'll just pay for this for you. And so I bought him the subscription. Now, anyways, why am I telling you guys this story? Well, first off, it is pretty funny because, you know, I talk about KYC and chain analysis all the time. And here my dad is fucking dealing with this. But there's actually kind of a point to this story. And the point here is that my dad, he actually represents the greater user base of cryptocurrency and that he doesn't understand any of it. And so the way my dad was using cryptocurrency is actually how most people use cryptocurrency when they need cryptocurrency. They're not doing extra research. They kind of just look for the easiest way to get from point A to point B. I talk about this in Darknet Market Maximalism, where, you know, there's this idea that, oh, people are just going to use the most private thing and they're going to be doing all this research and reading white papers when the reality is it's just Joe the plumber and he's trying to get from point A to point B and he goes online and he finds out, oh, I can just use Monero and he just uses Monero. And that's pretty much it. Now, I am somewhat exaggerating the story. He was using a legal service for what it's worth. However, the interesting thing about this, though, is that it doesn't really matter. Because if you have an address that gets flagged, suddenly your Bitcoin, if you're holding it on a custodial service, it'll just get locked. Now you have to go through all this song and dance of proving that, oh, I wasn't doing anything illegal. And then that's just more KYC, more information you're giving them. Whole thing's a racket. And this is really the bigger issue with Bitcoin, where you're going to be having KYC on everything. So like certain things will be graded and you'll probably have like a credit score based on the things that you buy. And this will all be, you know, completely traceable because everything will be monitored. And so because my dad was sending Bitcoin to an address that was flagged, he suddenly was flagged as well. And his funds got, you know, frozen. And so now he's dealing with that, which pretty funny at least. So yeah, I'm going to be having to probably buy that for him going forward. Cause, I don't think he wants to use cryptocurrency again. Dude, I don't think he wants anything to do with crypto anymore. All right, now to the news. And the first one is a pretty big update for the Monero GUI, or CLI, the newest wallet version 0.18.4.2 is now available. And the reason this is important is because of the find and save rings bug. There was a bug that was found that actually does impact privacy, especially if you're not running a node. And so it's important to update your wallet because this does impact things. And so the way this works is if you are connecting to a remote node, and this is prior to the bug fix, but if you were connecting to a remote node and you did not have any wallet files on your system, and by wallet files, I mean the keys and the cash file. So if you look in your system, you'll see those files. If you have neither of those on your system and you restore your wallet, then when you were to connect to a remote node, the remote node would run an RPC call, which would pull the transaction IDs for the transactions that you have made with that wallet. And the reason this is bad is because then a remote node will know what transactions you have made previously. And with that metadata, it's possible they can make transaction graphs if they have information about who received transactions that you sent, or if they have information about you from a KYC exchange. So again, this only impacts you if you are using a remote node that's untrusted, and also if you are restoring a wallet on a new system so you don't have any files saved. If you were to then go to a remote node and restore your wallet would then trigger this this call that would, you know, essentially pull all your transaction IDs. So therefore, a node that's malicious, they know your transaction IDs, and they can then make a transaction graph showing, okay, we know that these transactions are linked to this person. If they have any information about spends that might be linked to you, they'll be able to then look at those ring signatures and see spends and know that, okay, that has to be the real spend and these transactions have to be yours. So essentially, if a malicious operator knows the receiver of the outputs in those outgoing transactions, then the operator can tie that wallet sending funds to that certain receiver. And there is a Get Monero blog post, which I encourage you to read. This is very technical, but a smart malicious operator with a list of your outgoing transaction IDs can inspect the ring members of your going transactions and cross-reference if any of the members are outputs of transactions in the transaction ID list. And if so, the operator can guess with a high accuracy that certain change output was spent in a certain ring in a later outgoing transaction. And this allows the operator to construct a probabilistic transaction graph without amount information for wallet's funds after entering possession. So yeah, I mean, this only impacts people who are using remote nodes, and especially nodes that they don't trust. So, this is just another reminder that if you want to use Monero in the most private way, you want to run your own node. You also want to use Tor. That helps as well. This is just another metadata leak that was found and it was patched. So definitely update if you have the opportunity to do so. And node safety is definitely a concern. And this is why we preach why you should be, you know, doing everything you can to run your own node, because these things help. And speaking of node safety, there was an update on the whole Xano situation. The Xano privacy situation that we talked about like a month ago. There's an update, and the person who did the research, they posted an Explorer. It's not as in-depth as the whole Dero situation, but basically you have a rich list, and they don't show the full IP, but they make it pretty clear they can tell what the IP addresses are for people. They do censor it, but they show locations, they show different users, and they show estimates for how much Xano they've received based on the attack that they talked about with staking and stuff. I haven't even tweeted about this. I was kind of wondering if I should or not, just because it is somewhat sensitive, the information on there. But like, if you want to look for it, it's out there essentially. But I mean, they at the top of the page, they quote Aaron Day, who called it the big nothing burger. And yeah, this is definitely something. Again, people don't really take Xano seriously, so nothing's really going to happen from this. But if Xano was being used for, you know, in actual like privacy conscious situations, this would be a big story. But you know, it isn't, and I really would recommend them to take this seriously and adopt Dandelion +++ and actually, you know, work on building in Tor. The fact that they don't have that is like outrageous, I think, but they should be focusing on that. You can check that out, and if you want, I'll put a link in the description. Yeah, next up we got Cubic update. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a quiet week so far. I'm saying this now, and they're probably going to take the network down. That's been like kind of the running thing. I'll like record a podcast, and then, you know, later in the day, I'll like go online and they did like a huge reorg or something. But no, it's been kind of quiet. Basically, what happened was the price dumped this week. And also, they released their AI, and it was like a total scam. It wasn't even working. And they're like, oh, it's because, well, it's she's learning. The AI is learning. Like, fuck. Total scam. But anyway, the price dumped. They've been struggling with that. And yeah, they haven't really done anything crazy. And the thing is, if they're trying to get on a like tier one exchange, as they've mentioned before, you know, doing large reorgs is probably not helping their cause. And they're building a reputation of attacking different networks. So they're kind of stuck here. And probably their best strategy is to just use the Monero they're mining to keep their price up, which I think is what they're doing. And if they want to do that, that's totally fine with me. Just helps our hash rate and we can work together. But, you know, they're still doing their selfish mining. Whatever. It's really not having too much of an effect compared to previous weeks. You know, like last week, I dealt with two reorgs where I had to wait like an hour for a transaction to go through. But that's really what it is. It's an extra hour. You know, whatever. All right, guys, we're going to wrap things up there. Thank you so much for listening. As always, if you would like to send a super chat, you can go to xmrchat.com/Xenu. I also have merch at antimoonboy.com/merch if you want to purchase some nice looking t-shirts. And yeah, I thought that was a pretty good show. What do you think, Robot?
Beep boop. I am running knots. Beep boop.
Well, there you have it. Have a good one, guys.